All right, ladies and gentlemen around the Delaware Valley, welcome to Legal Talk with Jeff Nierenberg. We're sponsored by Nierenberg Law Associates. We've got a fantastic broadcast. Our host, Jeff Nierenberg, is in the house. How are you, sir?
Excited to be back for another month. We have a great guest today, so I'm excited to get started.
Absolutely. We typically talk a little sports. Lots of things going on in the Delaware Valley in regards to the Phillies, the Eagles. The Phillies are spending some money.
They're throwing around $300 million contracts like it's Cracker Jacks and popcorn.
I know.
It's incredible.
It's crazy. And I'm excited. I'm excited about it. A little concerned. Now we got to get. Obviously, we just picked up a pitcher from the Mets.
Yep.
We're spending a lot of money. I am a little. This may sound. I'm just a little concerned about throwing. We have two $300 million guys on.
It's not our money, Joe. It's John Middleton. We trust.
No.
He made a lot of money in Big Tobacco. Let him spend it on his team, and we're going to benefit.
I wonder sometimes though if that bubble's ever going to burst. At what point? I heard Aaron Judge right now.
Yeah.
So somebody said to me 2 days ago, and they may be wrong, but you ever hear Bobby Bonilla's baseball contract, $25 million, $1 million a year for 25 years, right?
Right. It's Bobby Bonilla Day.
Right.
I Bobby Bonilla. The date.
Every year at spring training, he picks up his mill and rolls.
Yes.
Somebody told me, it's possible that they were completely wrong, but that they're looking at Aaron Judge for 20 years for $800 million. That would have to be a Bobby Bonilla-type contract.
Right. That would have to be over a lifetime or over 50 years.
At what point? It's just it's actually scary money. And I think about it. If I'm a player,
The Scott Boros, sports agent,
right.
that was the way to go because these guys are making a piece of – $300 million contract.
So let's bring our guest into the broadcast so we can, let him weigh in on this conversation. Mike Dolan of Stockton Real Estate Advisors. Mike, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Joe.
Having said that, they always say, and I know you're a coach, right? You coach running and a number of sports.
I do. Running specifically, running.
A well-accomplished runner. Even right now, you'll hear.
I've heard.
Yes,
I can't wait to
believe it.
Which is why I can't imagine why me and Mike haven't, crossed paths.
Because you're always out there.
Well, I'm at least driving through some of those routes,
I'm sure you're driven by me.
I am. Isn't that Mike? But having said that, they always say, Jeff, never give up on your dream, right? That's important, right?
Right.
Well, I'm about ready to get my old high school films, throw them out there, see if I can get me a contract. I'm excited about it. Obviously, it's awesome that the Phillies are out there buying and doing those things. I worry a little bit.
Think of all the lean years, Joe, where we had nothing. We had Terry Francona. We were the worst team in baseball. They wouldn't spend money.
Right.
All of a sudden, we're like the number one spending team in baseball, and it feels great. And I'm hoping that we get back to the World Series again. It was great this year.
Yeah, Mike? I think one of the most important things about this whole situation is you have an owner who's committed to winning. And, I'm a big Flyers fan, and they don't have that right now. And it's disappointing. So it's nice to see the ownership of the Phillies go out and say, okay, look, I tasted what it tasted like to go to the World Series. I want to go back. I want to bring the fans back, and I want to bring a championship back to Philadelphia. And that's in light of what's happening in the city right now, this is a very good thing for the city.
Oh, well, we needed this so much. Think of the doom and gloom of this city. Michael and I lived through COVID each day where it was empty and desolate and depressing. And finally, there was something exciting. The Phillies brought a lot of joy and fun to the city.
Well, that was amazing. That was amazing. What this recent run did, okay? My wife and I, we are big fans, obviously of the Philly sports teams, and we grew up in Philly, so obviously, and we live in Philly. So, having said that, I said, when you talk about baseball, it's such a kind of a dynamic or non-dynamic sport. If you don't have a team that is a dynamic team, it can be grueling for an entire year.
I lost track of baseball for almost 10 years
because
our team stunk. So why am I going to follow Major League Baseball when our team stinks? It's
right.
Too hard. It's too slow.
Well, it's
too boring.
And what would happen would be we'd wait. We would always be relegated to a team developing, like Chase Utley, Ryan Howard, all them coming from our organization.
Right.
Next thing you got the big piece, and everything just developed. And I remember how many young people were so fired up. We were going to games, never, you know, that. So I work so much that my wife and I, our social life and our entertainment was the Phillies, but that's not big. Of course, they play 162 games a year, right?
Right.
So we would eat dinner once again. But to your point, Jeff, it could be brutal when it comes to any professional sport, but baseball.
The hardest one, I think, to follow when your team stinks is baseball.
Definitely.
I can still watch an NFL game if the Eagles stink, and I can always watch basketball because it's fast and easy, and I know most of the players. Baseball has become a sport of Latino and foreign players. I don't know most of the players anymore, and they come from Spanish-speaking countries, and it's hard to relate.
Well, I could tell you, if you don't have an image and there's no, you know, like – you know, the Houston Astros team, right?
Right.
We don't want to get into them guys, right? But they have obviously they've done a lot of recruiting overseas.
Yes.
And you know, you could see immediately they have a lot of foreign players, but there's a lot of personality there because they got a lot of talent. Everybody's working together.
Yep.
So it can be a great thing. When you don't understand, when there's a language barrier and you stink, it can be absolutely brutal.
Yeah.
You mentioned something, Jeff, about the city, you know, especially after the pandemic and obviously the social justice, initiatives. And Mike Dolan's with Stockton Real Estate Advisors. And we're going to talk about how the pandemic impacted, obviously, commercial real estate, you know, residential, all those things. But to your point, in regards to what the Phillies did this year, okay, man, when we got in, we beat Houston one game, and that got us in. We're the last team in the major leagues.
Right.
Told my wife 100 times, man, don't get excited about it. We're just happy to be in. What they did for us, and
it was shocking. It was stunning. It was so unexpected.
Oh my God!
So much in life is routine. It's boring, and here was something that just came out of nowhere.
And Mike, you know, having a profession where you're dealing with, you know, you're in Center City, you see a lot of what's going on. I had a show at one of the casinos on one of the Saturday nights when the Phillies were playing. And I'll say this, on my way back from the casino, I came out through Fairmount and through Center City. The city was electric again, man. And what they did was far just exceeded baseball.
Can you imagine what bars, restaurants, memorabilia, you know how much, you know what a boom it was for our city for October and into November for every bar and restaurant in the area? It was Christmas. I'm in October.
Hey, if I only had somebody who could advise me on betting during the game. Anybody you know, Mike?
We'll get into that later.
All right. That's not
just
important.
Just to add to what you were saying about having the teams doing well, because we don't want to forget about the union, right? So the union was playing for a championship as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So there was the opportunity of having two parades, right? So I was fortunate enough to be around when the Phillies won and then the Eagles won. And I remember the vibe of walking down the street. Everybody was happy. And, you know, we're yearning for that again because of, you know, what's happening in society with kind of COVID, how it's affected people mentally, physically, emotionally.
Yeah.
So when we were in the playoffs and we go to World Series, I was telling my kids, I'm okay with us not winning. Yes, I want us to win.
Right.
But it's nice to walk around and see people with Phillies gear on and people, the mentality.
It's been a miserable city, and
yes,
we definitely, it was uplifting. It was a happier place to be.
Exactly. And then throw the Eagles in, right?
Right.
And then what?
11-1?
Yeah.
Right.
And this past week, the butt kicking we gave the Titans, to me personally, that was the first time all year, especially with the defense finally dominating.
And them firing their GM after the game.
They did? I didn't know that.
Yeah, they just fired their GM because he made the trade of A.J. Brown to the Eagles, and the owner just was mortified, I think, by the trade, the butt-kicking, and the GM just got fired.
And him scoring two touchdowns.
And him scoring two touchdowns and kind of rubbing it in their faces a little bit.
Yeah, but at what point do you think it's okay to give him away?
He
had a career year prior to his contract coming up.
Right.
And they're going to let him walk? I mean, that just is foolish on the GM. And that's
how many times have the Philadelphia teams made that mistake? And finally, we benefited from the mistakes of another team.
Yeah.
They let an all-pro Hall of Fame talent go in the middle of his career.
Yeah.
It's us.
There's so many things that I'm excited about when it comes to the Eagles. And we're going to get to, by the way, real estate and everything that's going on in that area. But when you think of Jordan Davis, right? On a draft, when the Eagles drafted last year, all the the talking heads on sports radio have talked about how we needed some outside pressure again. We needed, you know, obviously we need some rushers. What I thought we needed was a dump truck in the middle of that line to stop the run, because once you establish the run, everything else opens up.
Right.
They get this kid in here, next thing you know, he gets hurt, and now they're running all over.
Look at the difference when Jordan Davis was out versus when he's back.
Oh, my God.
Night and day.
So we go out and get Linville Joseph and then Ndamukong Suh, right?
Right.
This week they finally got the system down, and Jordan is back, right?
We put the NFL on notice.
That's right.
Right.
So I'm optimistic specifically because it's the first time our defense looked like the Dallas Cowboys defense. They got a shutdown defense.
We smothered a pretty good team. They're not a great team, but they're a good team, and it was a dominant performance.
And Henry's no joke, man. Right. That guy has done some damage. So
yes,
it is a great time to be a Philadelphia athlete, and I mean a Philadelphia sports fan, and we're ecstatic. And, you know, so that kind of you know, takes us into, you know, real estate. There's nothing more important than the real estate market and everybody, you know, being passionate and wanting to stay in the city and doing all those things. And when you have that Philadelphia pride and a lot of excitement and buzz going around the city, it can't do anything but to help us. So, Jeff, do you want to do the honors?
I'd like to introduce Michael.
Please.
So I want to introduce my esteemed friend and colleague, Michael Dolan. We've known each other for, God, 20, 25 years. We met way, way back when I was a young lawyer and he was a young broker. He has put me in every office space that I've been in, my current space here at Duane Morris Plaza. I was at 2 Penn Center. He has always been the finest in real estate, in knowledge and preparation. He has guided us through complicated deals with landlords and all kinds of fine print and things that lawyers can't understand. Michael is the easiest and best way and best resource that you could have in the city for any real estate needs, commercial, residential, and he is just the top professional in the city. And I'm just really glad that he agreed to do his first show ever on the radio with us. And he hails from Philadelphia and the suburbs, and he's an active runner. And he's going to tell you more about that, because you're not going to believe what he's able to do at his age. And I'm just really proud that you're here. Thank you for joining us today, Michael.
Thank you, Jeff. That kind words. I really appreciate it.
Well, he told me a little bit about the running, and I'm going to throw something else at that. At any age, you know, 21, 22, world.
Any kids, he has it above all of them. Believe me, any age, any time. When you hear what he does, you will be impressed at any age.
I would go out and run with you tomorrow, Mike, but my ankle's killing me right now.
We'll find some dirt trails to run on.
Mike, it's not necessary.
Joe, I know we're going to probably talk about
Please.
It. Did Jeff tell you about our hike?
You have to hear about
a hike. A little
yes.
bit.
Let him okay, tell
so
it.
We'll,
let him
when
tell
we
it.
Get to that point, I'll tell you about it.
So if you would elaborate a little bit, obviously, on you know what you do.
Sure.
Tell our listeners a little bit about the company, the whole deal.
Sure. First of all, thank you for having me today. My name is Mike Dolan. I'm with Stockton Real Estate Advisors. I'm a partner. We're a relationship-driven, principal-owned real estate firm comprised of senior-level people with leasing and investment sales. We provide tenant advisory, landlord advisory, and investment sales aspects and knowledge to our clients. Clients hire us to solve their real estate matters. So I'm happy to be here. I've been working downtown for 28 years. I've seen the good, the bad, the ugly. Right now, we're in a little bit of the bad and the ugly.
I was going to say, I mean,
not definitely not the good,
right?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I look at the city, and Jeff knows me, and we get together often and talk about the city and what we can do to help the city, because big cities are important to the country, and it's very important that we recognize the value of these big cities. And right now, people just aren't appreciating the value of what the city brings, not only to employees, employers, and residents, but society in general. And my hope is that, you know, I was thinking about this the other day, and I don't want to be I'm really an optimistic person, and I do see things starting to swing in the right direction in the city of Philadelphia. And I think in the next cycle with a new mayor, I think there's going to be a lot of positive change, because there's a lot of good people in this city right now, from the CEO level all the way down to an employee like me, who are committed to making the city better.
I know the city's flush with cash. We have more money. And they're not spending it right now. Probably waiting for a new administration.
Yeah,
probably.
We're at a crossroad. You know, you don't work in this. You may be an employee in the city, but if you're not working in the city, you don't have to pay city wage tax. And predominantly, the cities run predominantly on the city wage tax, the revenues that are generated by that. And, you know, there's going to be a reckoning if we don't address this issue and encourage employees to come back from the top down. I'm all big on remote work. If you want to work 3 days a week, 4 days a week, I'm fine with that. But I think it's important that we bring people back to the office and get them re-engaged. I think society, it's better for society.
It is. We've had this conversation.
You and I have it all the time. And Michael and I have this all the time.
But I had a conversation today about, you know, somebody, you know, at one of the radio stations, and said, you know, they were working at home for so long now, and they wanted them to come back in. They don't want to do it. I'm like, it's a conversation we've had, recently a lot, and it's a little confusing. And I say that because you would swear after the pandemic unemployment hit, you know, was over, that people would be lining up for jobs. Where'd they all go? Well, here's an interesting. I do a real estate show.
Where did they go?
I'm going to throw something at you.
There's still places and restaurants and bars and stores that have no employees. Okay. Where did they go?
So Mike, tell me your thought on this, because it came up yesterday on a broadcast, okay? And it was a real estate attorney's show that I do once a month. And we were talking about the city and the issues with people paying rent and how there's like a moratorium on rent for individuals who are in a bad way, but there are people taking advantage of it. I thought during the middle of it, and I'm saying it can't be this completely, but I'm wondering if in the city of Philadelphia people aren't going back to work because. Now I know there's people in need, and that's important, okay? And it's appreciated that there's some leniency there. But, landlords have, not everybody's a gazillionaire landlord, and even the gazillionaire landlords own big buildings. It's hard. But the question is the fact that people are taking advantage of that, rent moratorium, is that contributing to the fact that some people aren't feeling the pressure to come to work and they can work remotely because they don't really, they don't really care. I can't imagine therefore you have buildings that are desolate in Center City. Your thoughts there?
From the residential side, I would imagine that people are taking advantage of that. If you're not going to be evicted and you don't have to pay your rent, and the tenant laws in Philadelphia are pretty strict and they're more lenient towards the tenant,
the tenant,
than they are the landlord. So I think that, if you're a landlord and you have tenants in there, you still have to pay your mortgage.
Right.
So it's kind of it's unfortunate because if you're working remote, you're still getting paid. You would think that you would pay your rent. From the office sector standpoint, you have a lease obligation. That's a contract. Whether you're in the office or not in the office, your obligation is still to pay the rent. And as you walk around the city, tenants are still paying their rent. When COVID hit, there were a couple tenants that I represent that came to me, and we tried to negotiate with the landlords, and a couple of them worked with us. And some said, you know what? It's a contract you signed. You have to pay your rent. And they continue to pay their rent. So I think it's more on the residential side that you see people taking advantage of.
No, I know that. But what I'm saying is, people all want to work remote, and not all, but there's a million reasons why that hurts businesses and people in businesses.
It's killing our city. I mean, we're not able to get back to normal and have a tax base. And there's a lot of residential people are leaving the city.
But what I'm saying is they don't want to come to work at the building. And so therefore, law firms are shrinking their footage because they now have people working, remotely, even in spite of the fact that they're losing out of places.
Well, I think that, with space utilization, and, it's a case study now, right? So a lot of architectural firms are looking at, okay, what space needs do you have? How can you reduce? Who's not coming back? Who potentially could come back? And how would that all work? With regards to getting people back to work, I think that we as a society have gotten very soft.
Yeah.
And there's a 5% unemployment rate, so the employees have the leverage right now. our company, when COVID hit, we had, we left for several months because of the moratorium. We had to leave the city. We polled our employees and said, what do you want to do? We like being with you. What do you want to do? And we only have 15 employees. Every single one of us said we want to come back.
Sure.
And Michael, I had the same thing. We were here. This Todd Jacobs, who I share the suite with, we did the same thing that you did, and everybody came back. Now, they were thrilled.
They were thrilled. So it's interesting. I talk with a lot of CEOs, and there's an imbalance right now, and there's a struggle, right? So you want to bring employees back because you know the value of having people together. You know, when you have a Zoom call, that's great. That's quick. But how do you have a follow-up? A follow-up Zoom call, and then you have another Zoom call. So productivity is definitely lagging. The CEOs that I talk to would love to get people back, but they're fearful of mass exodus.
Right. People will leave.
That's absolutely right. A lot of people, and it is confusing. What a lot of the law firms, we've had this conversation, but what they miss out on is being able to sit in a room, two doors down from Jeff Nierenberg and say, hey, by the way, Jeff, I have an issue here. There's so much professionalism and a lot of the experienced attorneys, young people.
How do young people come up in an industry at home on Zoom? And they're fighting for it. Young people are fighting to stay home, and they just don't get it. They don't get that they're ruining their careers, their advancement. And their abilities to be social, meet people, and have a more fulfilling life.
Right. And so Mike, when I was talking about how the pandemic and the working remote impacted the landlords, yes, I'm talking about the residential people who are getting screwed. Mm-hmm. It's the eviction diversion program. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about with the high rises, not the tenants not paying. I'm talking about the tenants. People, all working remote, and now the tenants are looking to downsize because of what's going on.
Well, if you walk down Market Street, before pandemic, all the lobbies were bustling.
Absolutely.
You had restaurants. You had
tons of traffic.
Tons of traffic going in. You had coffee shops. I mean, you walk down Walnut Street, Chestnut Street. I mean, you've seen several of them leave because there's not enough foot traffic. Now, if you look at the Center City District report, traffic's back up. Foot traffic's back up.
Sure.
But without the employees in the building, you can't have the laundry service. You can't have the little coffee shop. They can't rent space, and that space is vacant, right? And then you have, if your employees aren't going to come back, and let's just say you have 10,000 square feet, and now you only need 8,000 feet. You know, right now, if you look at the real estate market, and let's just focus on the CBD, which is Broad Street to the Schuylkill, okay? Right now, we're 18% vacant. Pre-pandemic, we were 9% vacant. Anything less is a landlord's market. Anything over 10 is a tenant's market. I don't want to be a doomsdayer here, but I could seriously see the market going to 30% vacant at the end of the day. You have a lot of buildings that really are going to have a hard time repopulating their buildings. There's a big flight to quality right now. So tenants are taking less space and moving into Class A or trophy properties. So the B buildings, the A-minus buildings, are going to struggle to keep their spaces occupied. And then, if they have a note coming due, a mortgage, a five-year balloon payment, now that value has decreased by X. They can't refinance unless put more capital in it. So, okay, what do you do then? Do you convert the building to apartments? Do you do condos? And we saw this before in 2008, 2009.
Do you see that in our future? Do you see some of these large, like my old buildings, 2 Penn Center? I mean, there's certain buildings that just aren't doing that well. Do you see them converting?
2 Penn Center, I don't see converting, but like the Wanamaker building, Center Square, Wanamaker building is going to have 400,000 feet vacant. Center Square has 400 plus thousand square feet.
Yeah, I had a business in Center Square.
Yes. How about Suburban Station?
Suburban Station's, that's right on top of the regional rail lines. They have always had, good occupancy. I think that building will do fine.
Convenience.
But if you
ease.
Look at 1701 Market Street, mm-hmm. where Morgan Lewis is, I mean, that's an office building that most likely is going to be converted to an apartment building. So the stock is getting less, right? Our market is now, again, shrinking. We saw this in 2008 when the buildings were going through the conversions. They were losing tenants because of a credit crisis. So, I would imagine some of these buildings will be taken offline and be repurposed. They're going to have to.
Can the city sustain that? Michael, can the city sustain that way? By losing the workers like you and me and Joe that come to the city every day, can we as a city thrive and continue to move forward with only residential condos and other things? I mean, does the city work like that? Will it work?
It's interesting. If you look at the city, you're walking around, you're seeing apartments being built, right? And these apartments are full. The vacancy right now is, I think it's 5 or 6%, if not less.
So you have a lot of young people that want to be in the city. And
is it because mortgage rates are going up and they can't afford to buy a home, or is it just rentals are hot right now and people want to be in the city?
No, I think it's the mindset of the younger generation. You know, they want the flexibility. They want to travel. They don't want to be tied down to a house, an ownership of a house. But, you know, I think if you're a young kid graduating college, you want to be in the city. And, you know, my daughter, when she graduated, she moved home for a couple of weeks. And she's like, Dad, I can't stay here. So she moved into the city. She moved on to Parrish Street.
Right.
Lived there for a year, absolutely loved it, then moved over by Rittenhouse. And, you know, for her to go out for dinner and grab beers or drinks or whatever and go home without having to get in a car,
it's great.
It's great. And meet people, right?
Sure. Absolutely, your job, Mike, obviously, as, you know, a top professional in your field the brokerage being a top brokerage, creativity, what had to kick in when you're reevaluating the market and some of the trends that are going on, and you work on kind of both sides, the landlord side and the tenant side, when you're talking to a landlord, a building owner, and they're losing occupancy just because of natural causes during this whole thing, what is your first move?
Well, your first move is understanding what your competition's doing. That's the first thing you want to understand.
Yep.
And, you know, who you competing against, what are they doing? So you then put together and implement a leasing strategy that's going to be beneficial to the asset. You have to – each asset's different. I leased the Grand Building, which is owned by David Grosso, 1600 JFK, which is 4 Penn Center.
David Grosso, a good friend. He negotiated my lease at my nightclub. 6 months, and he was on the other side. We became great friends.
he's a great guy.
Dave is
a
awesome.
Great guy. In fact, I met him. he's a great guy.
That'll come up later.
You know, he's an entrepreneurial spirit he has is just unmatched. He's just really smart, intelligent. He gets it.
And a decent guitar player, too, by the way.
I didn't know that.
He owns a restaurant
else told
now,
me
too.
That. He's a really good guitarist. I know he likes to hike, and that's what Jeff and I did with him. But
he likes to eat, obviously. He owns a great restaurant, a pizza place.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
Fantastic guy.
So I own, you know, I represent them. I represent an institutional owner at 1600 JFK, which their mindset's a little bit different than David's, right? So they're more black and white. You know, they look things just, it's all an economic decision. And then I lease a building at 2401 Walnut Street, which is when you're leaving out of the city going into University of Penn by a gentleman named Chuck Block.
Okay.
I don't know if you know him.
I know Chuck.
150,000 square foot building. So each individual asset class that I lease, we take a different approach to the market. But, you know, right now, I mean, you really need to roll your sleeves up and, you know, a lot of blocking and tackling, and you got to go old school.
Has there been a lot of repurposing? I'm watching even in my building here, people are either getting smaller, or they're looking for smaller footprints. Like, what are you seeing? Is each building different, or is there a trend?
Well, I think it really comes down to the tenant, right? So the building itself's not shrinking, right? So the building square footage is what it is. The tenants are really reevaluating their space utilization and how that space is being used. You know, it's interesting. Prior to the pre-pandemic, everything was open landscape, right? So unless you were a law firm or an accounting firm where you need privacy, you had a lot of offices. But with a lot of technologies, there were companies that were coming in the city. They wanted an open landscape. So you take 5,000 feet and put 40 people in it.
Right.
You don't have that now. You have them taking 7,000 feet with 25 people on alternate days, and then there's huddle rooms and offices that you can go into. So the design element has totally changed. Across the board, though, if I was to throw a dart at a dartboard, I would say that most tenants are going to shrink by 15 to 20% in office space. And
how will the landlords combat that? Like, so what will they do to be creative?
Well, the only way you can combat it is taking space back. You're not going to be able to have someone take more space than they ultimately need.
Are they renegotiating? In other words, are most – what I – so the name of the name of your brokerage is – Stockton Real Estate Advisors, right?
Correct.
Ironically, I say that because your clients, the owners, of the buildings, need advisors more than ever.
Yeah, I don't ever like to use the word brokerage because brokerage is putting two people together,
right?
And then you're done.
You're an advisor. You're a guide.
And we really pride ourselves on that.
Yeah,
we advise our clients, and you know, we have this mentality in our office. It's personal, right?
Yeah.
We really develop really good relations. I know everybody says this, and but I will.
He really
Jeff
does.
Knows me.
He really does.
You know, I'm the beneficiary of doing the transaction, help my clients get the economic transaction that they want with the least flexibility that they want. But also, I get the friendship, and I'll tell you, you know, Kim Banks, Mike Diamondstein,
so many.
Kim Banks. You talk about
Kim and Sonny.
Sonny.
He helped to lease the
through
space
Jeff,
that they're in right now.
We do seven. I do 70 shows a year with Sonny.
Yeah,
and I know Kim, of course.
That's so, Michael's deal. That,
so yeah, I've represented them over the last 15, 20 years, and Jeff referred me to them. And that's the other thing that we pride ourselves on. You know, you're not gonna, you can drive around town all you want. You're not going to see our signs all over the place. You know, we're competing with the big firms, the big three, but it's not about us. It's about our client, and our mentality is that we kind of act as the family office for them,
sure.
And handling their real estate needs. So everything's, you know, kind of under the radar screen of what we do. I'm in meetings and doing presentations, and people, oh, you should tell more people about all the companies you work for. I'm like, yeah, but that's not what we're about.
Those relationships have already been established. Yes. I'm sure that, like you said, the referral, like, you know, with Banks Law, and yeah. Those relationships speak for themselves.
They do.
I always felt that I was a hands-on attorney, and then I met Michael. Michael has so many nuances. There's so many little parts to a deal, even the size of this suite. I mean, we did this how many, like a year and a half out?
Yeah.
We had meetings and calls, and I just think about all the paperwork, and I mean, the time I spent with you and the time you had to spend with our staff was immense.
Right.
I mean, it's a lot to it.
You had asked me the question. I'm not sure if I even answered it, but you know, what are we advising our clients now, right?
Mm-hmm.
From a tenant's advisory standpoint, if your lease is rolling in the next 24 months, you know, we're just gauging the market. We're trying to understand where the market's going. And we're having a lot of in-depth conversations with our clients about, okay, you know, what's your support staff look like? How many more employees do you want to grow? You know, to Sonny, you know, we don't want you to sign a 10-year lease. You're 62 years old. You know, let's try to figure out a way to make sure that we can look at how long you want to be in your business, and then work backwards to provide you a lease term to that point.
So you're intimately involved and understand, you know, all the factors. You know, of your clients, so that you can advise them of things they don't even see coming and probably aren't aware of themselves because they're not in that field.
Right, right. So we were represented Preet, which is a big firm, you know, the Pennsylvania Real Estate Investment Trust. And
yeah.
One of the things, they moved out of a building on Broad Street, and, you know, what was critical to this client was their contraction and their termination rights. And just so happened when COVID hit, it just married right up to where their termination rights and contraction rights were coming in, which, you know, it was nice to see that come into fruition when we were negotiating that in the beginning, not knowing that COVID was going to hit.
Of course.
But that's why, you know, I always tell my clients, the economics, super important, very important. It's the second largest line item on your balance sheet. But also the lease flexibility is just as important as the economics. And, you know, we heavily negotiate that for our clients when I'm representing the tenants.
So it's important for you to understand the business of the client. I was not obviously an expert in real estate when we had opened up our hospitality facility in Center City. So we second between Spring Garden and Cal Hill.
You use Michael Dolan for that whole project.
We owned a nightclub. David represented Herman Robinson from Robinson Alarm, who was the owner of the building. Now, Herman was 90 when we started this, right? And he was a cantankerous dude. We had every political, you know, relationship, you know, trying to get him to give, and he did. But I did not have, you know, the knowledge in all the areas, contingency upon getting our liquor license and our zoning and all those things. How important is it for you to understand the business of the individuals coming in? Because as a liquor licensee, I had there were, including insurances and all those things that. People, you know, you get guys like Jeff and a lot and Sonny. At this point, they've been doing this a long time, but still, They're learning from you. How important is it for you to help them avoid those pitfalls that they aren't even aware of?
Yeah, you have to present it to them and explain the process and that you're going to go through, you know, during, you know, looking at space, evaluating alternatives and so forth. And you have to have just that one-on-one relationship that you can call and say, look, you know, and I'm using just Sonny as an example. You know, when I sat down with him, I'm like, Sonny, you know, everybody's trying to get us to do a 10-year lease, and that's not what we should do.
Right.
We've gotten proposals for 10 years. We should not do that. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So let's look at it from a different perspective. However, we want the best economics. We want the most capital. We want the most rent abatement, and we want the most lease flexibility. So there's a process that we go through, and I've negotiated hundreds of transactions in kind of like the funnel effect, right? So you start at the top in the funnel, you pour everything in, and then as you go down, you always want to have two or three horses in the race, and then you start to pick and choose from those different elements of the transaction that one has given you but one hasn't.
And you have to start early. You taught me you have to start early.
You have to start early. Right. You want to be 24 months out. The more time you have, the more leverage you have.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it made sense. Mine was a 6-7 month negotiation, yeah, which is probably like, you know, not really that.
Now, you can get it done, but you don't have the opportunity to really flush out every single problem that may come up during that time frame.
Michael, with Stockton, I know that you guys invest and own real estate. How has this changed the landscape, COVID and post-COVID? I know that you own buildings. You're always looking and searching to own properties. How has it changed your investment opportunities through Stockton?
So right now, investing is very difficult. The interest rates are high. If you weren't hard on a transaction, meaning you put the capital all up and you had a closing date, it's not closing right now. I mean, everybody is extremely concerned about where interest rates are going. They're concerned about inflation, and they're also concerned about making sure they're not buying at a certain watermark that may go down. Right. So the investment market is pretty much shut down. We, as a company, Jim and I, my partner, worked together in 99, started working together in 99, and, you know, we're creating all this value, right, for all these other owners. We wanted to kind of create some of our own wealth, right? So in theory, that sounds great, right? Like, this is an incredible opportunity. We're going to go buy buildings. We're going to be
right,
bring our friends and family in.
You're going to develop.
And, well, not necessarily be a developer, but be an owner of real estate versus just a leasing advisor.
Okay.
So, you know, one of the things that by doing that and going through the process, you know, one of the first buildings we purchased was 1515 Market Street. So you had this group of, you know, five or six guys just buy its $85 million asset without anybody even knowing about it. So we bought it off market. That was our first one, which in theory sounded incredible. But then the credit crunch hit in 2008, and we ultimately lost the building, right? So you live and learn. It was one of those situations. But what I tell my clients, because people say, oh, well, you represent landlords and tenants. What I bring to my tenants that I represent is a landlord mentality, because I understand how landlords think.
Right.
I know the profit centers. I know what they're thinking, what they're strategizing on, what they're trying to achieve. From the tenant side, I'm able to position my clients better by having that knowledge.
Yeah, I was going to say, that dovetails
into what I do. You have to think of your case and through the eyes of an insurance company or a defense lawyer. To really represent them and maximize, you need to know what they're looking for.
Exactly.
And you've got to give them those things.
And Jeff,
check the boxes.
So many individuals in your field have worked on the defense side, and then
yes,
when they go on the plaintiff side, it's invaluable because they're able to kind of consult their clients on what's going on, because
it's a double-edged sword, Joe. It's funny you say that. Yes, there's an intimate knowledge of what State Farm and Allstate and the defense are thinking of, but sometimes they're institutionalized. They've been defense lawyers for so long, they can't see that how the three dimensions of a plaintiff's case. There's so many aspects to it, and they only focus on a few of them because, as a defense attorney, they've never had to do what a plaintiff's lawyer, which is be creative and come up with different ways to make money. So it's good and bad. But Michael is able to really manage both ends of it because he's on both sides of it.
Yeah, and then layer on top of the fact that, you know, we've been involved in purchasing buildings. So we understand the acquisition. We understand the capital required to improve the building, what the operating expenses are, and all of those things that you have to think about as a tenant. When you're negotiating, you know, what your base year is, how are the escalations over the last 5 years going to affect the next 5 years of you that you'll have to pay to the landlord. So understanding all those nuances helps me and benefits my clients.
And during this very uncertain time, talk about what setting client expectations, but not really setting. What can clients expect? Because I can only imagine. Yeah, and it's the same with good lawyers. Being a good lawyer is not just, litigating and understanding the law and all that, but also having the disposition to be able to handle the clients. I've met and talked to a number of lawyers who just were stressed out all the time. And if
the
they got one more call, they'd be like going out, literally leaving town.
You're going against an insurance company, a lawyer, and a lot of times your client also.
Well,
and it's hard.
That's right.
It really is difficult.
But you can't avoid what's going to happen. So in other words, if you're short with your client or you don't communicate with them, in other words, next thing you know, you got problems. And if talk about what it takes in your position, Mike, to be able to maintain that, to get those calls at night, to do those things, and maintain that communication.
I'm very fortunate. I have great clients, and I can have heart-to-heart conversations with my clients, and I don't sugarcoat anything with my clients, and I tell them what I think we can do, and I tell them what I think we can't do.
Your disposition, and speaking from experience, very, very even-keeled, very not bombastic. You're not so emotional. It's business, and you're a calming influence in a sometimes very, very chaotic field.
Yeah, I try to tell my clients, don't get emotional, but I can understand why you are getting emotional, because when COVID was hitting, you're sending a check every month for $15,000, $20,000, $30,000, and you're not occupying your space, right? So there was a lot of angst there. No, people weren't really sure when this was going to end. Remember the old thing, we'll be back in 2 weeks? Stop the spread. Now what I'm telling my clients is looking at the marketplace and saying, there's going to be great opportunity. If you're a tenant in the market right now, in the next 24 months, there's going to be tremendous opportunity for you to take advantage of the market. 2017, 18, 19, you were a tenant, you were kind of at the mercy of the market with the vacancy rate the way it was. Now, if you need 25,000 feet, there's 100 space opportunities.
Wow.
In the CBD here.
How much?
What does CBD stand for?
So Central Business District.
Okay.
And how many were there in 19, right before the pandemic?
Before the pandemic, there's probably 100. Now there was probably about 20.
Big difference.
At a rent stream that was very high, right, mm-hmm. that they were trying to command. Going about talking about the market and where we see the market, I do believe that the vacancy rate's going to go up. Landlords are still trying to preserve their quoted rental rate. They're throwing more concessions at tenants, which is concessions meaning tenant improvement allowance dollars, rent abatement, growing into the space, shorter lease term, just to try to get some occupancy going for the next time it gets better.
And are they improving amenities? Are they trying to put gyms in or cafes and things like that?
Yeah, before COVID, all the buildings were trying to do that. And now after COVID, it's interesting, Jeff. 16-hour JFK, perfect example. Yeah. People come, do you have a gym? No, we don't. Do you have bike park storage? No. Like, you have to have certain amenities to attract people because someone's checking the box to compete. A little right. little frustrating.
Right.
Where David, we have a tenant lounge.
Do you advise your landlords to do these things?
Do.
I'm sure.
We do, but everybody's investment thesis is different.
Right.
Right? So 1600 JFK, they're long-term holders. It's a coupon clipping situation, and they just want to get revenue every month and income in. And, David's creating value. Right?
Talking about David Grosso. Yeah.
David Grosso wants to create value. And we're in the process right now of doing a tenant lounge, designing a tenant lounge in the lobby area. And that's what we're seeing. Now, ultimately, whether someone uses it or not, who knows? But you have to have it.
Sure.
Because that's what the employees want.
And it's interesting because, I guess, staying so tight on the market is, it's daily changes. Where some landlord is, obviously you talk about amenities and different things that one guy's offering. Now all of a sudden that changes the bar. And I can only imagine some of the conversations you've had with some landlords when they find out that so-and-so is offering this, and now they're establishing the market. In order for them to compete.
Yeah, and it comes down, in a situation that we're in right now, like you either have to make a decision. Are you going to compete for transactions, or are you just going to sit on the sidelines and wait and hope it gets better? Right. And, if my crystal ball, this could take 3 or 4 years before it gets better.
Yeah. When will interest rates, do you think, become stable?
I'm not an economist, but I just read an article that they plan on continuing to increase the interest rates to try to bring down or bring up the unemployment. They want unemployment to go higher.
To what end? Like, so where do you see the stabilizing at? What numbers do we think that it'll finally kind of level off? Is there any crystal balling there?
So my father's 80 years old. And when we moved out of Chester, we moved to Aston. And he bought a house. And it was, you know, that, you know, we went, moving from Chester to Aston was like a huge thing for my father, right? So we lived in a 3-bedroom row home. Now we're going into a single colonial. He paid 18% interest rate.
It's amazing. God.
So we got so accustomed to paying
minuscule,
no, 2%, 3%
rates.
Interest rates. Now all of a sudden we're paying 8%. Whoa, that's way too high. Oh, you know, it's way too high.
But that's half of what.
So to answer your question, I honestly, Jeff, I don't know when interest rates are going to subside. I don't know if the, you know, there's a total imbalance right now, and they're trying to get it balanced. And, you know, again, I'm not an economist. You'd be better off, you know, if we reached out to somebody from Wharton and had them do an analysis, but I don't think it's in the next 12 months.
Well, the city, switching gears, if the city were to improve, and, you know, obviously we have a new mayor and there's more energy in the city, will that start to turn around the whole real estate situation in Philadelphia?
So, I talk to CEOs, as I said. I talk to human resource individuals, presidents, managing partners. You know, there's a big concern in the city with crime right now. So until they address that, and by the way, Joe, I see you putting your hand up.
Yeah.
You know, we all need to stop watching the news and actually come to the city, because it's not a shooting gallery. There's,
and that's what everybody thinks. I have so many friends in the suburbs, and I know you do, too.
Oh, we all hear
that. Work in the city. How can you work in the city? Aren't you scared? I would never go to dinner in the city. I'm not going to this office party.
You know me.
I'm scared.
I made it a point that I take public transportation.
Right.
I support the city. I get off. I walk upstairs. I walk along the streets. I walk down Chestnut Street. I walk all the streets. The city is not as bad as the news is making.
No question about it. I think leadership,
terrible.
You know, and that's a major problem. And
the messaging of the city has been poor.
Well, we need some. You know, the mayor is the mayor, right? So he's an elected official. You know, I'm not. I don't live in the city of Philadelphia. I live in media. And, you know, I always tell people, like, you don't want to vote for your elected officials if you're voting for a prom king or queen. Like, you have to do your due diligence. You have to know why you're going to hire this person. And, you know, unfortunately, we got stuck with someone who's not a cheerleader. He's not a motivator. He's not out promoting the city. And it's frustrating.
Oh, my.
Extremely frustrating.
Well, you know,
everything was fine and good
until the crap hit the fan. Okay. In other words, everybody knew he was a liberal dude. And he was, in my area, he was a big supporter of project labor agreements and of the union community. But when the pandemic hit and when the social justice movement hit and when all the stuff was going on downtown, he came on TV and was bawling, and you know, he talked about, you know, one of the things he said was, it was great to see people working together. His comment on everything was that, you know, to clean up the street, like, well, wait a second. And one of my biggest problems was, we live in the city. Mm-hmm. We're on some sort of curfew while people are destroying our center city. We can't even go down there. And so we needed leadership during that time. We need leadership more than ever once this guy's gone. And at the end of the day, it's really impacted our city.
It has.
The
images of the riots in the city are hard to, you know, it's scarring. All
well, what's, I get it.
Watching Walnut Street burn without any ramifications. They didn't round those people up. I mean, it's incredible.
So I think you hit the nail on the head, right? There's something, what happened was a disgrace, right, in society, that we as humans allowed for that person, what happened to that person and what caused all this, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's a tragedy. The problem was, when this happened, there was no law and order. And, you know, it was scary. I was still coming downtown.
You and I came every day. Yeah. Even during the riots,
well,
I came to work.
And look,
it was scary.
By the way, this conversation, I mean, you know, can open up a lot of areas. And we don't. But look, like you said, Mike, of course, what happened to George Floyd was an absolute disgrace. And I remember walking down the steps of my house, and my wife said, "Look at this." Now, we see a gazillion things, okay, you know, on TV. But I remember walking down and backing up and going, Oh, my God.
His foot is still on his throat.
On his throat. And that guy, later. And that guy looked like he was sitting there having a cigarette watching a ball game. That's how little that Derek Chauvin was.
And a grown man is calling for his mother.
Dying, okay? Yeah. And that guy didn't sweat. He let him die. So the point is, it was a disgrace. We all felt that way. And it has created a consciousness that has been woke up. And at the same time, we're all passionate about sure. social justice. However, we need to have law and order, and people can't. You can't just sit there and make a decision on who's committing crimes and who's not. And our center city was burning. I have a saying, and that saying is this: you can do and say what you want, but you cannot avoid the consequences. You look at center city on a set. Now we're building it, and I'm in agreement with you, Mike. Let's bring people got to get back to the city and all those things. But
their
leadership was lacking during that time.
So I have earlier today you had said that I coach. One of the things that I say to these kids, where there's darkness, be the light.
Yeah.
And we all are socially responsible to help people, and we're responsible to be leaders as adults in a room. And I think what happened. What we saw happening to our city actually hurt us emotionally.
Emotionally.
Physically. And we're all scarred from it.
Because no one stood up and said, wait a second, what's wrong is wrong, because we all recognize that.
Oh, yeah.
But how are we allowing this to happen?
Well, there was a lack of leadership in the city of Philadelphia.
Right. But it's been compounded, Joe and Michael, by not fixing it. Now, there is that opportunity where I think we all agree that we're starting to come back, people are coming to the city, but we're not doing enough as a society the city to bring it back.
Now, guys, we got about 4 minutes left. Right. Three minutes and 40 seconds.
I like his taste. Welcome into running.
Well, I'm saying, and by the way, and having said, so this is a fantastic conversation. And, let's touch base with Michael on one thing. We talked about his great running, right?
Yes, you need to hear about this.
I just want to hear. I mean, Jeff was telling me, you don't only do marathons, you do
ultra marathons.
Ultra marathons.
Let it, Michael, speak
please.
To your hobby, your passion, and what you've been doing your whole life.
I've been a runner. I was never good at any other sports when I was younger. I got cut from the basketball team. There were seven players at St. Robert's, so
I wasn't much of a ball player.
I was bad. I mean, I would foul out in like 30 seconds. So luckily, this guy Vince Tui pulled me aside when I was in high school at St. James and said, "Hey, you should sign up for a cross country team." And I ran ever since. And believe it, I tell everybody that running saved my life.
Sure.
It did, because it gave me purpose, and I've able to take my running and influence other people and coaching and seeing young adults and helping them go towards the journey of achieving their dreams, which is priceless.
And that's a big deal. Like, we've had the sports and law conversations, but those lessons learned.
You've become a mentor to hundreds and hundreds
of
kids.
Speak
to that.
Yeah, so, I was involved with Student Run Philly Style with Jim in my office, and I'm a big believer in helping people and helping young people. And running is one of those sports. You don't need to be 7 foot. You don't need to have good hand-eye coordination. If you can chew gum and walk, and you can run. Now, the question is, how much pain do you want to feel, right? So you had asked me a question. I've done these crazy runs where I ran rim to rim at the Grand Canyon, where you run from the south rim to the north rim and back.
From how many hours? Tell them how many hours.
About a couple miles.
8 hours.
8 hours.
9 hours, depending on who I'm running with. But, I've been fortunate to do these things, but what that's helped me do, it's given me purpose, and with real estate, real estate's extremely demanding, and it's a long process. And when you're training for a 60, 70-mile race, and you're going to run through Zion National Park with no help, you got to be prepared.
That's awesome.
And I take that same mentality with my clients and the kids that I coach. Jeff knows this. If I could do anything, if I was able to write my last chapter of my life, I want to be a head coach. I just love kids. I love watching them
and making
grow
a difference in their lives
and impacting it and making a difference, because we as parents, I don't know if you have any children.
One child.
You have one child. And Jeff, I know you have three children. Mm-hmm. That role that you play in guiding those kids is so – that's the most important thing that you're put on
this
earth.
That's the biggest contribution that you can make to society.
Mike, we have to talk. we got a minute left.
Even though you're from Wood.
Right, right. Roman. Oh, come on.
Wait, no, you went to Roman?
Roman.
I thought you said Archbishop Wood.
No, Roman Catholic High School.
Oh, my gosh.
Can you believe we just did this show?
Yeah. All right. Like I said earlier, as long as you're not from O'Hara.
And I'm a Jewish guy from Abington.
no problem with you, Jeff. Mike, real quick, yes. If you would, contact information at the firm.
M. Dolan, D-O-L-A-N, at StocktonREA.com. And my cell phone number is 610-529-2079.
And that's Stockton Real Estate Advisors. And, of course, our host, Jeff Nierenberg. Contact information, personal injury lawyer, Supreme.
Yes, Jeffrey Nierenberg, Nierenberg Law Associates, Jeff at PhillyPILaw.com. And I'm at 215-569-9100.
All right, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Legal Talk with Jeff Nierenberg here on WWDB Talk 860. We got a fantastic broadcast. We want to thank Mike Dolan, Stockton Real Estate Advisors, for being an awesome guest. This is, this could go on another 2 hours, and maybe it will.
We didn't even take a break. I thought there'd be a break.
That's right. No need to take a break.
Why take a break?
Exactly. On behalf of Jeff Nierenberg and, of course, Mike Dolan, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Suffering a personal injury due to the negligence of another, whether it be from a motor vehicle accident, an Uber or Lyft accident, a slip and fall accident, a workplace accident, or other, can be a devastating, even life-altering experience. Jeffrey Nierenberg of Nierenberg Law Associates understands how an injury can turn your life upside down. That's why he represents his clients with the utmost care and passion. At Nierenberg Law Associates, you get the representation and resources you need to win and the personal touch and results you deserve. Contact Jeff Nierenberg of Nierenberg Law Associates at 215-569-9100 or online at PhillyPILaw.com and get the recovery and justice you deserve.